This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. Last week, MSP claimed the Skywalkers were rising. This week, we want to give you some hope as MSP's Matt Armitage deep dives into the science and tech advances that he hopes will define the next 10 years as the Flaming 20s. Flaming 20s, Matt, isn't a reference to the Australia bushfires, is it?
Hey, Rich. No, I would never be as crass as that. No, I mean it in the terms of, you know, the popular fire emoji sense. This, I hope, is going to be the decade where our ingenuity and our awareness, you know, set the decade on fire. Because when we look back, you know, the last decade was pretty poor. In the last episode of MSP, we ran through some of the many reasons that this might be the case. The overreach of Silicon Valley and technology firms in general, the rise of dark money and fake news on our social media accounts, and of course, this kind of growing and general mistrust of technology and science and anything linked to them.
None of which indicates why you'd be optimistic for the future.
Well, last week we talked a lot about realization. So the noughties was a decade of hope, you know, where we trusted that technology would liberate us, that it would enrich us, maybe materially, possibly even spiritually.
Rather than send us into dark holes of despair and dissatisfaction.
Well, exactly. You know, I'm not going to go over the same ground. You can listen to last week's show if you need a dose of despair and devilry. But, you know, I ended it with some of the things that I think will be bright spots in the next 10 or even 20 years. We mentioned CRISPR, gene and biotechnology, the ongoing revolution in food, the growing importance of things like blockchain technology. Most importantly, we talked about that growing awareness that people seem to have, especially that spirit of activism that the younger generations seem to have. And I ended the week saying, ended last week's show rather, by saying that, you know, the Skywalkers are rising. And I really do believe that.
Where do we start then? With biotech?
Well, we'll get there in a minute. It's always fun to look back at predictions of the future from a few years ago. You know, this is the 2020s. Now, you and I were kids at roughly the same time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I got there a little bit before you, to say the least. But what did you imagine that the 2020s would look like? What was in your mind?
Flying cars, obviously, was the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah. Anything else? What else? I mean, you know, if
mega cities.
Okay.
You know, I'd read a
lot
of
Judge Dredd in 2000.
Judge Dredd kind of
2000 AD.
Yeah, I think a lot of it kind of came from that era. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, similar for me as well. You know, I thought we'd have all of the good things in the Back to the Future movies. You know, the hover cars and the skateboards.
Yes, yes.
I didn't necessarily think we'd have flying cars, but I did think that helicopters would be everywhere. We'd all have those personal gyrocopters or whatever, and I imagined that everything would be gleaming and white and clean, like, you know, all those 1960s sci-fi movies. And of course, you know, that people everywhere would be healthy and wealthy and well-educated.
You really were a hippie, weren't you?
Look, I just believed the best of people, and I believed in our capacity to learn.
Yeah, and how did that work out?
Well, look, I'm still optimistic. I might trust people a little bit less. I'm a bit less reliant on them, and I accept that as a species, our ability to remember stuff puts us closer to, I don't know, goldfish than elephants. But, yeah, I mean, go back to those predictions. When you go back too far, if you go back to, like, when we were kids, it all looks wacky, like we've just described. Mm. So I thought we could look at a World Economic Forum report from the mid-2010s.
Three words guaranteed to wreck a party. World Economic Forum.
Sorry, but I thought that the Clown's Guide to the Future would be slightly less relevant for today. Among the predictions from the WEF's Tech Pioneers of 2015 were the use of AI to personalize our devices, which I guess is true in the shape of Siri and Alexa, although the AI involved is still pretty much dumb. Mm. Another area they mentioned was electricity, building global grids for the 21st century. Unfortunately, there hasn't been a lot of progress there. We're still pretty much stuck with the model of a 19th century power grid. Renewables, yes, they are extending power to parts of the less developed world, but it's very slow and it seems to be happening in a piecemeal fashion.
And what about those huge solar farms that were mooted for places like Saharan Africa?
Well, it's not even clear that the power generated will benefit those local communities substantially. Once again, it could be a cash crop and much of the power will be sold on. The developed world buying a scarce resource from countries who actually have an even greater need for it. Mm. And then there comes to the scarcity itself. And I'll admit to a lot of disappointment here. You know, there are incredible technologies that maybe they won't end scarcity, but certainly they can nip at its heels. Things like 3D printing, additive manufacture, which I still can't say after 10 years. You know, it's amazing, but not amazing enough. You know, where's the 3D print shop on the street corner? You know, why are we buying from Amazon when we could be printing at the local neighborhood bodega?
It doesn't sound too far off beam.
Well, by and large, the predictions are not too bad. You know, most people were off in terms of scale rather than substance. You know, there is a sense of optimism from those predictions of 2014, 2015. But maybe that shows how off track things have gone in the last 5 years. One commentator said we would be less occupied with fancy phones and more with fulfillment in our lives. Instead, you know, we're experiencing scarcity, rising prices, less fulfillment and more fear, as well as fancier phones.
I mean, let me just say, though, I mean, so far, this is a strange way to introduce an optimistic episode.
All right, so I'll get to the bright spots.
Yeah.
One bright spot, obviously, is the moon. Mm. You look up there, it's very bright. Obviously, we're boldly going where lots of people have gone before. Everyone seems to be in a race to get back to the moon. It looks certain that within the next 5 years, we'll have the first female astronaut on the moon. It's just a question to see whether it's going to be a Chinese astronaut or a US astronaut. And of course, India is also planning its own moon landings.
Do you think we'll be staying this time?
Well, it seems to be the intention for certainly on the part of China and the US to establish more permanent bases. They've even talked about putting bases on the dark side and using them for telescopes, even for launching missions to places like Mars, because there's less energy to launch these missions needed from there. It's less certain, though, whether it will be feasible, not necessarily from the resupply point of view, especially if we discover quantities of ice, which we can use for water, but actually down to the geological stability of the moon. Massive earthquakes are common, and these prolonged shakes can last for hours and hours with aftershocks going on for weeks and weeks. So the question is whether we can actually build structures that will withstand these enormous stresses. Weirdly, it seems that building a station like the International Space Station is actually much easier to plan and build than having physical structures on the moon.
And what else, much else, be going off in space?
Well, space is going to be one giant dance party, I think, with that Tesla Roadster playing Space Oddity on repeat for infinity. You know, as much as there's concern over the number of satellites being spun into orbit around us and cluttering up the heavens, we look set to make enormous leaps in knowledge through our exploration of space. At the moment, we can only see and detect 5% of the universe. The rest of the universe is that elusive dark energy that we suppose has to be there, but we have no way of proving or testing.
Oh, are we going to find it?
Not necessarily within the next decade, but the further we're able to see with telescopes, the further spacecrafts and probes can travel, the more understanding we gather and the closer we come to unlocking that puzzle. We'll be sending missions to actually bring back samples from Mars. The Jupiter Icy Moons Explorer, which is fantastically called JUICE. It would have been even better if they called it Juicy Moon, but, you know, that's going to be sent to search out life on three of Jupiter's moons where oceans have been identified. And telescopes will be looking for more exoplanets. Now, we've identified about 4,000 exoplanets already, and there are probably hundreds of thousands more, if not even more than that. And with these more powerful devices, we can start to look for the biochemical signatures that could suggest that the planets can support life. So by 2030, we may have a much better idea of whether we're alone in the universe or not.
After the break, we stick closer to home as we look into MSP's technology and science predictions for the decade to come. You listen to MSP here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Beyond Frivolous Matters, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. This is MSP with Matt Armitage, of course, from Culture Pop. My name is Rich Bradbury. Before the break, we were looking towards the stars with a sense of hope. But as we know, most people will never get the chance to leave the planet. So what can they look forward to in the next few years?
Well, I promised you biotechnology, so this one actually combines biotechnology and artificial intelligence. So it seems that Big Pharma is increasingly collaborating with and buying over AI-based companies. Over the last 10 years, advances in gene technology have generated so much information that it's been impossible to analyze it. You need some form of machine learning just to process what we're discovering. And of course, machines are able to find patterns and significances that don't actually occur to human beings. So, Richard, you went on the show a few weeks ago where we talked about an AI that could look at ECG results and it could predict from those results whether that person would be alive in 12 months' time. It was looking at historical data. Mm. And its prediction rate was incredibly accurate. But the thing is, we don't know why. We have no way of decoding what the AI found in those results, and it has no way of communicating it to us. So the machines are just looking at patterns that we simply can't comprehend.
And this same thing is happening with medicine?
Well, this is from a story in Wired. So GSK has partnered with a British company called Exscientia. They're building an AI that can design new molecules, essentially the building blocks of drugs, based on this pharmacological data. These networks can sweep through vast swathes of the genetic data that things like the Human Genome Project are discovering, and they can connect the dots in a sea of information that a human being would struggle even to figure out where to start processing. And there have already been early breakthroughs. There's been a new treatment for the chronic lung disease, COPD, and we can expect to see many more of these discoveries over the next few years.
Could they be used to short-circuit the trials procedures as well?
Well, certainly they can map potential interactions of drugs and molecules in the human body and simulate or at least guess what the reaction is going to be inside the human body. Merck is working with a company called Atomwise. Its technology can simulate more than 10 million compounds per day. Now, that might not make medicines faster to bring to market, but it does limit the time scientists spend, you know, researching those dead ends, and it can potentially open up more fruitful paths for them to follow. So we could see the hit rate in drug development strikingly improve over the next decade. And hopefully, of course, we'll see that translate into lower overall drug costs because we're not paying for the research and development of those dead ends. But, you know, sometimes I have my doubts that that's what we're going to see. So far, we have AI-developed treatments for things like Parkinson's and pancreatic cancer already in the works. So the importance of AI to medicine is only going to increase as we move forward.
And what about stuff like quantum computing? Will that play a role in all of this as well?
Well, quantum computing is one of those weird technologies that hasn't found its true purpose yet. It really is a case of if you build it, they will come.
Yeah.
Most instances, we don't know whether quantum computing will outperform classical computing in any kind of significant fashion. We do expect it to help us make huge leaps in cryptology, medicine, quite a lot of other areas of industry, as we discussed. But a lot of the smart money seems to see it as some kind of future-proofing. Mm. Quantum computing will be a critical part of our future, but we don't actually know how as yet. If you actually teamed up AI and quantum computing, what they could do together is literally anyone's guess, because you've got an unknowable being making calculations in an unseeable dimension, creating outcomes that we couldn't possibly predict.
You spent a while writing that sentence, didn't you?
I did, yes.
Yeah, you're supposed to be giving us good news, not scaring us, Matt.
Well, there's got to be some fun in it for me. It seems pretty certain that we'll see AI surpass the Turing test benchmark very, very soon, these machines will become indistinguishable from a person in some circumstances. In fact, I think we touched on that a little bit in BizBytes mm-hmm. on Wednesday morning when we were talking about AI-generated photos. And that takes us back to the more philosophical parts of the show. You know, who is responsible for the machine's decisions? Does an AI car decide that it's better to risk your life or that of another car's passengers in avoiding a collision? Mm. What legal status does that machine have? Is it simply a machine there for us to use? Is it like a pet with some limited legal protections? Or will we start granting these machines human equivalent rights? You know, at the moment, if someone writes a bad algorithm, we can pursue that person or that company for negligence. But what happens further down the line when a faulty AI is writing its own flawed algorithms, and on and on and on down that change? So yeah, it's going to be interesting the next 10 years.
And not too cheery.
You say potatoes, I say potatoes. let's go to something that's a bit more straightforward, like 5G.
Right.
So we'll start seeing the first impacts of these high-speed mobile data networks in 2020. It's going to take a few more years before we see the true impacts, but at a base level, there will no longer be any real difference between data speeds at home and on the move.
So 4K movies on your phone on the daily commute?
If you're one of the people lucky enough to still have a job by 2029, yes. But no, we will see the advent of truly mobile business. Applications that are currently too data heavy to use on the go will become as easy as playing Snake on a Nokia. But, you know, the biggest initial change, I think, will likely be in the Internet of Things. Sensors will be able to stream much richer, much more data. It becomes feasible to have high-resolution cameras and sensors pretty much everywhere.
You're thinking of surveillance capitalism.
No, I'm being optimistic. I'm thinking more of things like, you know, traffic cameras or even counting salmon leaping upstream, measuring and watching the melt on glaciers. I'm thinking of monitoring rather than surveillance.
You say potato, I say potato.
Yeah, exactly. And the most exciting cases will be the ones that we haven't even imagined yet. Mm. The possibilities that streaming will open up, like AI-equipped chips. We might even see super lightweight devices with almost no need for onboard storage, because calling up data from the cloud will be as quick as calling it up from a memory card.
Will we finally cross that brain-machine divide, do you think?
Well, I think there was a recent essay by Steven Pinker in the Financial Times that essentially suggests that the 2020s aren't going to be some kind of brain hacking Rubicon, but at a more modest level, by which I mean still pretty freaking incredible, we're going to see a lot of advances in this area. So, for example, we talked last week or the week before about chips that are essentially artificial neurons. Mm. These can replace damaged nerves around the heart and repair the signals that are sent to the brain so that people don't require pacemakers or electronically implanted devices. We could see the same kind of interfaces being used in prosthetic devices or exosuits. So even if you can't repair the damage done to a body, someone experiencing paralysis can essentially replace the damaged limb with a machine that's actually controlled by their brain. Mm. We're seeing those same technologies being used to tackle neurodegeneration and the other side effects of aging. I'm not going to go into too much detail there because I want to do a show on age technology in the next few weeks.
Always a risky one then, this. Shall we head into lunchtime with a question about food?
I will try not to get too horrific. Now, I mentioned awareness at the start. You know, we have a generation now that is more aware of how to eat healthily, what the environmental impact of their food is, that's committed to reducing excessive packaging and waste. It's exciting because it's something that's very dynamic and it's very consumer driven. And it's also a bit of a sandbox. It's an area where people can flex their muscles and see companies respond almost instantly. And that's an attitude that they can carry over into dealing with companies in, you know, other aspects of their lives.
But aren't these essentially developed nation trends?
Well, sure. You know, most of the people in the world don't have the luxury of rediscovering the joy of cooking because cooking is the only way they get to eat. What we're also seeing is that rapidly developing countries like India and China are quite open-minded about their protein sources. They're more open to these vegetable protein or meatless or laboratory grown meat alternatives, which are essential if we're going to limit the environmental impact of protein production in the next decade. There simply isn't enough land to produce beef and pork if everyone in the world is eating at the level of countries like the US. Also, you know, we're seeing huge changes to how and where food is being produced. Increasingly, we're seeing urban gardening, urban farming, bringing fresh food. Increasingly, we're seeing urban gardens and urban farming bringing fresh food production back into cities. We're seeing a lot of smarter land and water use. Again, you know, we're going back to that 5G implementation. Each little potato could have its own sensors and camera and AI caring for its every need. And we're finally learning that we have to look to our history. We have to look at what crops were traditionally grown in given places rather than shipping in huge quantities of water and chemicals to force something to grow in essentially the wrong place.
Okay, let's end on this then. What will the city of 2030 look like?
Well, it's not going to look massively different. We have this habit of looking for changes rather than similarities. But as a species, we've had two arms and two legs and two eyes for a very long time. It's just that now we use the thumbs on those arms to type on a smartphone. In 10 years' time, as long as nothing too cataclysmic happens, the world should look much as it does today, because a lot of the technology of today is invisible. It's something that you experience. You experience the changes rather than see them.
And if something cataclysmic does actually happen?
Well, you may have noticed that I didn't talk about the environment or energy production much this week, mainly because it's not such a good news scenario. But that's something that we'll come back to in another show in the next few weeks. But keeping it on the up, you know, if we can keep some of those darker forces at bay, then we have a lot to look forward to from science and technology over the next 10 years. And I love the fact that the people listening to this show may be helping to shape or even contribute directly to some of those tech and science advances. And that, for me, I think is truly a bright spot in the flaming 20s.
You have been listening to MSP here on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.